Thank you, Ezra.
Gosh darn, I hope my talking is better than my horseshoe pitching was. Your PI person beat me. I don't. That's ominous. But my name is Billy Moore, 54 years old and definitely an alcoholic. I'll tell you, it's wonderful to be here. I want to take this opportunity real quick to thank the people for inviting me. Thank Ezra for that nice introduction. He didn't stay around that pole out there very long. But it's just beautiful to be in West Virginia. But I know you people are glutton for punishment, because I think it's the only state that I've ever been invited back so much, you know. Most of the time they get me one time, that's it. They don't want me back no more. I heard somebody talking a while ago, you know, when I first come into Alcoholics Anonymous was in Cleveland, Ohio, and some of the people would be at, I'd be visiting Rosary Hall, and I'm in there visiting, and somebody come up to me, "Oh, you had a beautiful talk last night." And then there was an elderly gentleman by the name of Doc Cavett up there. He's passed away now, so I'll give the whole thing. And Doc would call me aside, and he'd say, "You know how long they've been sober?" And I said, "No." He said, "Less than 30 days. When they get sober longer, they'll know what kind of a talk you've got." And I heard that tonight, you know, from a guy, you know, that talked the other night, and somebody said that he was talking about what a beautiful talk you had. And he said he hadn't been sober very long. But it's beautiful to be in a fellowship like this. If you're brand new in here, don't worry about it. You ain't going to believe what some of the things that I've got to tell you. And I didn't either. Don't worry about it. When I got here, they told me, now if there's young people out there, you say that old gray-haired bastard ought to get sober. Now, I'm going to tell you, I got sober before I got gray-headed. I was told about AA when I was 22 or 23 years old. I went to my first meeting when I was 26. Finally got sober when I was 29 years old. And since January the 27th, 1964, I've not found it necessary to have a drink, and I've not even cheated on the necessary. it's beautiful. It continues to get better, and I didn't believe that. People say, and it continues to get better. The longer you're sober, the better it gets. You can only get so sober. What's going to happen after that? They also said if you stay around here long enough, you'll get so you'll enjoy it. I may stay sober a whole lifetime, but I'll never smile again. What are you going to do if you don't drink? I could not picture life without alcohol. How the heck you gonna? Can't have no fun. I knew them people that didn't drink, went around folding hands all the time. Yeah, and gosh darn it, I was afraid to be around them. And I thought they was funny people, you know. I love it. You get around here and you're around the same people we was while we was in the bar. Only thing, you just can't smell them as bad now. Yeah, but some of us, that's the only difference is our breath. Now. If we manage to stay around for a while, though, we start picking up some things that we want to live by, and not always real good. I've always fallen way short of what I've got a program to work towards, and I hope to God I always do, because if I ever get to where that I think that I've got it all together, I'm ready to get drunk. I'm ready to get drunk. I always want to have something else to reach for in Alcoholics Anonymous. I never want to get to where that I think that I've already reached my ultimate goal. And it tells us in this that we're not even striving for spiritual perfection. It's to get a little better, to get a little better. And I can truthfully tell you, I've got plenty of room for that, to get a little better all the time. And I hope it continues that way. There's me and a guy here, we was talking earlier today, comparing notes about a little Amish guy I used to hear talk, and he said, "As long as I stay green, I'll grow. When I get ripe, I'll rot. That's the next thing after ripeness is rottenness." And I don't want to get there. I want to stay green. I can learn from brand new people all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's why it's so important for me to continue to make 12-step calls. for my sobriety, not for his. As I heard one speaker say, you know, people be patting me on the back. Oh, what a great job you're doing to try to help that drunk. Hell, I'm not going because he's a drunk. I'm going because I'm a drunk. I don't know what the hell he is. And so that's the primary reason for me to do most of the things that I do in Alcoholics Anonymous is for me to get better. For me to get better and to get a little bit closer to my God today as I understand it. Oh, I rebelled against that when I got to AA, and I don't know why. Now, I was brought up in the eastern part of Kentucky, and well, just right across the river from where Eve is now, you know, over in Martin County, Kentucky. And I was knowing there was 16 different types of religion up there, and every one of them was Baptist. Hard shell, soft shell, United Southern, and all, man. Any kind of Baptist you had right there. And I knew I was going to hell, but you were going to hell if you had fun. Now, that's the way I interpreted. I know they didn't tell me that now, but that's the way I interpret that religion that I was brought up in. And I left there when I was 16 years old. I know now I didn't leave because of the compulsion to drink. I left there to get away from discipline that I needed desperately and still do. Still need discipline in my life today, and sometimes I can do it pretty good on myself. And sometimes I can't. John Barleycorn is a good discipliner. He can get you pretty humble where you have to do certain things. And I like that badge he had to wear. I ain't going to quote what he says, but that's all right from the podium. But I really like it. You know, and it's getting down to the level. And John Barleycorn is going to take over if we don't do the things that it's quoted on there. And that's work the steps one thing for sure. I don't know. I left home at the age of 16 and returned when I was 19 years old, and I'm confident now, looking back now, that it was just as much alcoholic at the age of 19 as it was the day I walked through the doors of AA. Now, the problems continue to get worse, and I know if I go back out there today, they will still continue to get worse. They're no better for the alcoholic. It's a progressive disease, and it's already been a proven fact that it progresses where you're drinking or not. You've seen this. The longest period of sobriety that I've ever seen a person where he stayed in this program and went back to drinking was 29 and a half years. I've seen one go back with 29 and a half years and never got sober again. He got dried out a lot of times. Never got sober again. Died from alcoholism. And as far as I'm concerned, he had a real good, solid program, and I talked to him after he had the slip for the first time, and he said he had a solid program for 26 years. The last 3.5 wasn't too solid. But we never have it completed. We never get to the point in this thing where we can take it for granted that I'm cured. And that's a constant reminder to me that I know that my disease is just arrested, and it strictly depends on my maintenance of my program today. Strictly depends on the maintenance of my program. Somebody spoke up today, you know, we're sitting out there at the table, and they said we can't stay sober today on yesterday's sobriety, which is true. I've got to maintain this thing each and every day of my life. Not to go to a meeting every day. I'm not saying that. Now, I go to a lot of meetings, but I'm not saying I have to go to a meeting every day. I don't have to. We've got so many tools in Alcoholics Anonymous that we can use. God's the biggest part of it. The biggest part of it is that asking God for help, you know. A big thing for me too. I'm nervous today. I know. Probably some of you people already realize that, but I'm real nervous today, and that's all right too. Today it don't bother me a bit to be nervous because I know definitely that I'm not supposed to have all the answers in AA, and I'm finding that out more all the time. It's a lot easier for me today to tell you people. If you ask me something that I don't know, I can tell you I don't know. I do know pretty well where to find out the answers today if it pertains to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so that's all I need to know. is to know where to go to get the answers. I know a lot of good people, you know, you can call up and say, hey, what about this? What about that? You know, we might not get the right answer, but we'll get a answer. You better believe. And that's sufficient for me today because I can maintain another day of sobriety. I mean, I wanted to get some things out of the way here right now. Now, I wasn't a drunk that drank every day. Now, some of you people are sitting out there, you know, I about ready to disqualify myself from Alcoholics Anonymous because, shoot, I would have be sober 2 weeks sometimes. And you know, an alcoholic can't do this. He's got to drink every day. And so I'm about ready to disqualify myself from AA, and this was in Cleveland, Ohio, and I've already got permission from this guy to give his full name. He's a retired fireman. A black guy in the city of Cleveland, his name is Lou Williams. And if you ever get a chance, look him up there. And so Lou, I'm about ready to disqualify myself, and he stands up at a podium like this, and he said, I didn't drink every day. I didn't get drunk every time I drank. I didn't get in trouble every time I got drunk. But every time I ever got in trouble in my life, I had been drinking. Do you ever remember going to jail sober? I never did go to jail sober. And I went a lot of time, but I wasn't always charged for being drunk when I went to jail, but I was drinking and doing some things that I shouldn't have been doing. Now, I'm not going to say that that's a requirement. Now, there is some people in Alcoholics Anonymous that still go to jail. But for me, I never went to jail sober. I never have yet. Now, here's another guy say, you know, he said he only remembered going to jail one time. But he said, gosh damn, I remember getting out a whole lot. I was in blackouts early in my drinking. Now, some people, I know this, that they make it all the way to Alcoholics Anonymous and never had a blackout. I heard one guy, he said that he made it all the way to Alcoholics Anonymous, never had a blackout. I talked to him 3 days later, and he'd had 5 blackouts while he was drinking. He hadn't drank no more since I'd seen him the last time, but our memory come back, you know. And another guy said he'd been sober ever since he could remember. I could identify with that. Ever since I can remember, I've been sober. We go to a lot of these things, and you pick up so many things, you know, that would just ring a bell. With the one guy, I want to tell you what I heard from one speaker standing at this podium, and it was his last talk that he ever gave, and he stood up here and he said, "There's nothing in the world that I can do today to make my God love me anymore. So good that will make my God love me anymore. There's nothing in the world that I can do today so bad that will make my God love me any less." And I believe that. I believe that with the bottom of my heart. I believe he loved me because I'm his child. And that's all. Not for the goodness that I do. Now, I may displease him, but it will not dwindle his love. He's got that unconditional love for me, something that I'm not capable of having. I am not capable of having unconditional love for another person. But God has it all the time. There's one lady said, if God treated me like I treat my kids, I'd be in trouble. Gosh, no. Yeah, because we tell our kids, you be good and I'll do this for you. You be good, I'll do this for you. But God don't do that. He don't do that. He makes it a little easier on us sometimes when we ask for his guidance. And that's the only thing I've ever got. I've never had no flashing light. I've never had no divine words come from up above, you know, that I hear. Sometimes I interpret somebody else's words as his, but sometimes you find out they're wrong later. But I know when I pray, I feel better. Any time that I've ever sincerely asked God for help or just to talk to him about a little problem, I feel better. The problem might not go away. The problem may still be there. But I look at it in a different way when I'm in contact with my higher power. And I rebelled against that when I got here. I said, you know, these people stand up here. I'll tell you one reason why I rebelled against it. Because somebody would stand up here and they'd open the meeting with a prayer. The speaker cuss all the way through his talk. And then they close with a prayer. And I say, why the heck don't they make up their mind what they want to do, cuss or pray? You can't do both. I was taught that. You know, you do one or the other. And so I rebelled against prayer after I got sober. Now, I'd prayed while I was in jail, as I told you. Did you ever pray when you was in front of that commode? Gosh darn. You kneel down in front of that commode and you don't know if you're ever going to stand up again or not. I've been down there many a time and I was sure I was never going to live. That old green stuff coming out, you know, tears rolling down your cheeks. Oh, gosh. God, you get me over this one and I'll never have another drink as long as I live. I never quit for just one day. It was always for life. And then to get here, you know, I don't want to hear about that prayer. I even told this one sponsor of mine, he picking me up and taking me to meetings. I didn't have no car when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I still had driver's license. Now, it's the other way around now. We got a lot of people with cars and no driver's license now, you know. And they really clamped down on that. But I didn't have no car, and this guy was picking me up and taking me to meetings, and he's picking another guy up by the name of George. And me and we dropped George off first. And I told Bobby, I said, Bobby, it don't bother me to hear this God bit. I lied to him. I said, but you're driving George right up a wall talking about God so much. And he looked at me and he told me, he said, haven't had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps. And he said, what I'm talking about is them other 11. And he said, I carry this spiritual experience to other alcoholics and practice these principles in all my affairs. And he said, I'm here to tell you I've had a spiritual experience. And he said, if it bothers George, it's just too bad. My sponsor is still carrying that spiritual experience, and I'm glad I didn't change his thinking. You know, he kept right on laying God on me. And then after I was sober for a couple, 3 years, I go to Volunteers of America. The guy that asked me to come there and talk, he asked me to come and talk at Volunteers of America, and he said, down there, some of these people, they come right off of Skid Row. A lot of them have been abused by mission houses and stuff like that where they had to pray for a bowl of soup. You get saved, you get a change of clothes. He said, a lot of people have been abused. He said, so don't mention God if you can avoid it. I said, okay, I think I can handle that. And I get up and I talk and I give a talk, and it didn't mention God, and some old man stood up in the back of the room, and he said, boy, if you ever give credit where it belongs, your sobriety will be a lot fuller. It's God keeping you sober. So we had a complete meeting, and we still got God in there. You know, I didn't have to mention it. Some person that was in the program there did. And it was covered real good that night, I thought. And it's been that way for me since I've been sober. I'm not going to tell you people it's been a bed of roses. But I'm going to tell you if I compare it to my drunken life, it's been a bed of roses. It depends on what you're comparing it to. I've had 3 heart attacks. I've had bypass surgery. I got down last year where I had arthritis so bad I couldn't walk hardly. I'd go to AA meeting and come home and didn't know where I was going to get out of the car or not. But now I'm going to tell you people now that this year has been the best year I've had in about the past 5 or 6 years. And it's getting wonderful. And I told my wife here not too long ago, I said, I'm feeling so good. I said, I feel like I'm committing a sin. Now, I know I'm too old for that, but my wife used to call me over sex, but I'm going to tell you now, that's gone. She had not called me that in a long time. She had not even mentioned that. It's not the purity of AA, I know. It's something else took its effect on me. And if you're young, don't worry about it. It'll go away one of these days.
Just hang in there.
It continues to get better for me. For me and my family, it continues to get better all the time. I'm going to tell you what I had maturely when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I had two end tables, a coffee table, a rollaway bed, and a $29 TV set that we'd been using for about a year. And that was the only material thing we had in the world. We did live in a little three-room furnished apartment with the plaster all beat off the wall. I'm working for General Motors, and I just couldn't get home with a paycheck. Simple as that. I stopped off to get it cashed and never could make it. I ended up in personal bankruptcy. Some of you are probably familiar with trusteeship, you know. I got in that thing one time, you know. I got thrown out of that. They was garnishing my wages, you know, going to garnish my wages. And at that time, you got fired if you got garnished. And so I go to this trusteeship, you know, go downtown, take my paycheck down there. They would take a part of it and give it to the company. They would give you sufficient money to live on. And so, but you're on your own to take the check down there. And I did it two or three times. But then I get my check, you know, and I'm on my way down there, and I stop at a bar to get her cash before I go down. I'll take my statement and what money they're supposed to have. And I didn't get there. I was out on my own. They just told me. They said, we can't do nothing with you. You're on your own. And then I ended up having to file personal bankruptcy for less than $2,000. But I was owed so many darn... I'd owe four or five of these finance companies. You couldn't owe nobody much if you didn't have no collateral. And I didn't have nothing. When I did have a car, if I had a $300 car, I owed $500 on it somewhere. I sponsored this one guy in the mid-70s, and he said, I just went to a finance company and borrowed money yesterday. And I said, you did? He said, yeah. And he said, they asked me if I was still on that 53 Buick. And he said, I told him yes. He said, I junked that thing in 61, and he's still borrowing money on it in the mid-70s. He still had the title to it. But, you know, I can identify with drunks like this. I know where they're coming from. Now, I go to jail meetings now, and I love this. I go in there, I hit them a lot. I don't know. There's so many things that we've got an opportunity to get to where that we can get the help we need in order to stay sober. I come out of them darn things, sometimes I feel 10 foot tall. Not a thing in the world, I've not even had no part in it. All I did, went in there and sat down and sure them participate. And, you come out of there, you know what we're in. You know what we're in. If you're brand new in here, find out what you're in before you shit can it. Let's put it plain, you know. And because so many times we come through here, you know, and this one speaker talks about, you know, it don't take us long to find out. You know, we just go right on back out there. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous in 61, as I told you, and finally got sober in 64. I didn't get really involved into service until late 60s. I started getting involved with the intergroup they call the Cleveland Central Office, kind of fundraising. They would have it 2 weeks a year, you know, to raise funds for the operating fund for the year there, and to get involved in that and helped out on that some. But then when got to Kentucky, come back to Kentucky in 77, and that's where I really got involved in the service. And gosh darn, if you've not took the opportunity to get involved in service, I know what the service, picking up ashtrays at your home group, each and every one of us get involved in this. And it's a big part of AA. Somebody got to keep the doors open. That's the biggest part of it, is keeping the doors open to the beginning. But if you're not comfortable and you feel like there's something else lacking, explore it. Go on further. Go on further. Look for something else, because there's things we can do all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous. But the biggest thing I think that we overlook, and that's helping another drunk to get to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Helping another drunk Do you know anybody that just come in brand new in the program now? Like you feel they've lost their driver's license? Maybe they won't be able to get to a meeting unless somebody dropped by to pick them up. Somebody dropped by to pick them up. I'm awful glad somebody took the time to pick me up. I know they could have handed me a meeting schedule and said, "Here it is, boy, if you want it, go get it." I didn't even know what the heck it was. How could I decide where I wanted it or not? You know, I didn't know what it was for quite a while after I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. Had no idea that I needed these things this bad. This sponsor of mine would come to my house, he said, and he would stand there and he'd say, "You going to meeting?" I'd, "No, I'm going to stay home and watch TV tonight. I've already been sober 2 weeks, and I'm almost cured by now. No, I don't need as much help as I did." And I'd tell him, I'd say, I'm going to stay home and watch TV. And he'd look at the watch, and he'd say, "Well, I'll wait 5 more minutes. And meantime, he never did tell me how many meetings I needed to go to in order to stay sober. He told me how many meetings he needed to go to. He said, "I don't know how many meetings I need to go to in order to stay sober." He said, "The only way I'd ever know for sure is to cut down until I get drunk. And then I know I went to too few, you know." But he said, "I know how many I need to go to kind of keep my thinking straight." And so I would stand there, "Yeah, well, I better go with him to help him out." He's going to fall below his meetings that he's required to have. And I went long enough to find out that this program would work. I stayed sober for 9 months, the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to say sober, as I really enjoyed it. Anybody enjoys waking up on Monday morning and still having enough money in his pocket to buy a cup of coffee. I think anybody feels a little better about themselves when they can do this. And I could do that then, you know, while I was staying sober. Thing kind of fell in place for me and mine. And so maturely we was getting along better. We wasn't arguing so much at home. Well, we still argue yet. But we will never get a pass this. I'm confident of that. If some of you people have made it, good. More power to you, brother. I've not got there yet. And I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't even know if I want to or not. It's still fun to make up yet. Not near as much as it used to be, but it's still fun. old Bobby kept me around long enough to know it would work, and then I dropped out after 9 months, and I'm going to tell you why I dropped out. I heard a young lady saying here a while ago talking about, you know, that she really had a desire to drink right now. You know, and this is okay. You're in the right place, brother. As long as we got that, we're in the right place. That's the way we're supposed to think. Until we kind of get straightened around here a little bit. That's all right. And so I conned myself into believing, you know, I'd went from 5 months to 9 months without having a desire for a drink. And then all of a sudden that desire popped back after 9 months. And I said, I know what I've got to do now. I've got to get out here and just drink till I get my belly full of that stuff. Come back in AA and everything will be all right. Get it out of your system. And I went out there and I got drunk. And well, I got back about 2 weeks later and got her out of my system. And about 2 weeks later, I got to get it out of my system again. And then for the next 2 years, I was having to get it out of my system. You know? And I began to think that I was one of them people that was never going to be able to stay sober during that period of time. I calmed myself into believing that I was one of them unfortunates, never going to be capable of being honest with himself long enough to stay sober for any period of time. I knew I had to come to AA, even if it was just for them short periods of time. I needed AA desperately to live where I was going to stay sober. I didn't even plan on it. Now, the first 3 or 4 times I was in AA, I could have told you the hour, the minute, and everything that I had my last drink. The last time I come in AA, I'd been sober. I knew what month I'd went to the hospital to sober up. I knew what month I was in that hospital. I did not know what day. And so after I was sober about 14 months, a guy asked me to talk at my home group. And I told him, I said, "I don't even know when I had my last drink." He said, "I know. I do." He said, I already went and checked the record. At that time, you know, they tapered you off on booze. And you went to the place that gave the most booze, I guess. And you got, no, I didn't have that. I didn't have that mentality. But I heard other people say, you know, the ones that served the biggest ranks where they went to. But by the time I got ready to where I needed help, you know, I went wherever anybody was willing to take me. But I went to Bayview Hospital. I'd already went through Rosary Hall under Sister Ignatia. You know, that's something to look back on now. Should have got sober under her, but I drank within 10 days after I got out of Rosary Hall. Drank within 10 days. Now, that'd have been a historical thing to look back on. I didn't think Sister Ignatia was so great at that time. but you know, now looking back now, I know she was. But at that time, I didn't. This first guy my wife ever called, I didn't meet him for a while after I was in AA because he sent somebody else out to talk to me. And he said they'd go to these meetings, you know. And he said that these people would talk about how great Sister Ignatia is. He knew, the hell are you talking about? You're not talking about the same one I am. He went over to talk to her, and she said, hey, I seen Betty the other day, and she's still wearing her high school clothes. When you go buy her some new clothes? He said, but hey, God, she wasn't so great to me. Insulted. Now, I went to the Sister Ignatia, never did say nothing out of the way to me except just love. That's all she ever gave me. I know I've heard her get on some other people. Gosh darn, she was furious with some people. I know that. Maybe she looked over me because I was Baptist. I don't know. but I heard her really, one particular guy, we were sitting there in the hall one night, and she come through and she said, I see you here every night. When do you go to AA meetings? The guy looked at her and he said, well, he said, you told me when I come through here, said, don't get overtired, too sleepy, or hungry. And he said, I have to go to work early in the morning. And he said, if I go to AA meetings, I won't have time to get my sleep. He said, get out of them meetings so late at night. And she looked at him and she contradicted herself then. You know, she said, I never have seen in the paper where anybody died from lack of sleep. I see where people die from alcoholism all the time. And she said, there's no substitute for an AA meeting. It's wonderful to come and visit these places, to visit other drunks, but there is no substitute for an AA meeting. And I believe that still yet today. There is no substitute for an AA meeting. I'm not saying that each and every person has to be gauged on the same thing of how many meetings they need to go to. I've already talked to one person in particular that got to his home group four times a year, every 3 months. He was in a foreign country. He had to ride a train for 180 miles. And he said he got to go to it every 3 months. And he said, boy, that was the greatest day of his life when he could get to his home group. And he said he was always sharing letters, tapes, and stuff like that with other people all these other 3 months, you know, when he wasn't able to make it. We're in one of the biggest and most beautiful programs in the world. The most beautiful program in the world. You know, we was talking out there a while ago, you know, have you ever been in any organization where there's as much love as the RNAA? Never have seen nothing like that. No place else in the world. Now, I've not been no place, but from what I hear about other people, you know, and I hear that when a guy was talking about this Harry Ryan's place there in Cleveland. Harry Ryan had passed away now. It was Stella Meyer's home, what it was. But a real cocky individual run that after Harry left. Harry was a humble sort of guy. He was belligerent, but he was humble. but after Harry died, this Frank Ryan took over, or Frank Engel, and he took over, and Frank Engel took over, and Engel was he was a different breed altogether, y'all. But gosh darn it, he helped me so much, and he was. I even forgot what point I was going to make about our Frank now, but it don't make no difference. As long as I can reflect back on these people, and if I just reflect back on the people that's helped me, that's already gone. That's already gone. That's already left this darn thing. You know, I've got all the wisdom in the world there in my past, you know, to flash back on. Frank Engel, he was a belligerent rascal. You know, there's some people with these ego problems in AA. Now, you believe it or not, there's a few around. There's not very, very many of them. Just a few good people, you know, that don't have these ego problems. Like me and Bill Bailey, we don't have that problem, but there is a few people that do, you know. But I got you. They're all right. They try their best, and if they stay around long enough, you know, maybe we can help them with this problem that they've got. I want to never forget that every person that's in Alcoholics Anonymous is awful important that we be here. Each and every one. I got on a darn soapbox here not too long ago criticizing people that was, you know, hitting on girls in AA. say, gosh darn, they don't even give them a chance to get sober, you know, and they're hitting on them. And I'm in Cleveland, and a guy stands up, this is back last year or year before, I'm up there, and a guy stands up and gives a talk, and he's on that same soapbox I am, and they have a comment section up there after the meeting, and so I jump up and thank him, and I said, boy, just keep drumming her in there, we need to hear more of that. My son's in the program now. On the way home that night, we're going back to my son's house, and he looked at me, and he said, you know, I don't think that was appropriate from the podium. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, bad rapping people because of their defect of character. And I said, well, I don't know what you're talking about. Somebody got to straighten them people out. And he said, you know, he said, each and every one of us come in here with defects. Give them a chance. Let them work through their own, you know. And we don't know which defect they're working on now. Maybe not the worst one they've got, you know. And I didn't admit to him that I was wrong that day. I waited about 2 weeks before I called him and told him. I said, you won't hear me running people down that way anymore. Because I guess, you're right, that stands out. Everybody can see this. I've got some defects, and I know that. I know that I've got them. And sometimes I can keep mine hid, you know, from you. Maybe not let all of you know what my defects are. But each and every one of us has got them. I don't know of a one yet that's sitting out there. And if one of you have, if you made it all the way here, and now you've worked this perfect program, and you've got rid of all your defects, come up here. I want to talk to you after the meeting and see how you did it. Because I know each and every day that I look, you know, I've got more. I try to work on one and uncover others, and I hope it continues that way. Because I've got something to work on each and every day of my life. I know that service has been a big part to me. I come back to Kentucky in 77, as I told you. General Motors got rid of me, and I want you people to take a note of this. Right after they got rid of me in 77, that's when they started downhill. Now, they're on their way back up now, but they went down for a long time there after I left. I went and worked in the shipping room up there. You know, I had a lot to do with their downfall. You know, I loaded that stuff on the truck, and if it don't get out of there, brother, it don't get nothing happened to it. But I come back to Kentucky in 77, and fell in there, and I've always loved Kentucky, and I still do. I think it's the greatest state in the Union. Really believe that. I believe that with all my heart. This one good friend of mine and Bill's there from Florida, and I was telling her how great Kentucky was, and she come to Kentucky, and we're going to Louisville, there at the Southeastern Conference, and we're going out to eat, and she looked at me and she said, "Billy, I don't see Kentucky the same way you picture it to me." I said, "Well, you've not seen it through my eyes yet." And it, maybe it's kind of clouded a little bit, but after I was in Kentucky for a while, I got involved in service, and I went to the Galt House, and they presented me with the Kentucky Colonel Award. And gosh darn, I was walking on cloud nine, you know. I felt like I was 10 foot tall that day, and I was walking around there, you know, with a Kentucky Colonel Award, and old Bill Wallace, God rest his soul, He come up to me and he said, "You know, Billy," he said, "I was real proud of my Kentucky Colonel Award too, until Happy Chandler gave that belly dancer one." And I looked at him and I said, "Well, Bill, she probably done more for hers than we done for ours." I knew the only thing I'd done just got sober, you know. and so it kind of brought me back to earth a little bit. And then a few years later, they happened to choose me as their delegate for the state. I worked up through the ranks. Well, in Kentucky, you have to. There's no possible way for you to get there any other than going through the proper channels. You can't be DCM unless you've been GSR. You can't be delegate unless you have been DCM and attended at least 75% of the meetings for the past 2 years. We have different qualifications there, what any other area does, I think, on that. We've got to draw up our own guidelines on that. And if we don't, they're just eliminated from leaving their name in if they've not attended at least 75% of the meetings in the past 2 years. And so, happened to get chosen as a delegate for the state of Kentucky, and then served as chairman after that. And the only reason I'm telling you this, not because I offered anything to Alcoholics Anonymous, because it made me grow in my program. I don't think I had a thing in the world to do with any changes or anything like that, except in Billy Moore's life. It enhanced my life. I can truly tell you people, and I met some people, and I'm going to say now, you know, sometimes, you know, we try to cut these non-alcoholics out of our program. And yeah, I like this, Wine Old Joe there, he gives some history of AA, and he said so many times that AA was just ready to fail. And then some bell ringer would come along and enhance it a little bit and get us started again, you know, in the early days of AA. Always been somebody else helping us out all the way through Alcoholics Anonymous. My home group, a guy's talking about, talked at our anniversary last year, and he's talking about this group when it started. It started in 59, my home group did. And he said in 58, he was in a mental hospital in Louisville, Kentucky, and preachers from Campbellsville, which was 85 miles away, would bring people to Louisville to go to AA meetings. These are preachers that have nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous other than just having a deep compassion for the drunk, wanting to help the alcoholic. And now it seemed like here in the later years, we're trying to cut these people out. We're not even making them aware we've got a meeting. Sometimes we have a meeting right in their back door and don't even make them aware of it. I'm talking about Kentucky. We have this, and and they said, "Well, we don't need them. What do we need them church members for?" I said, "Don't I need each and every branch of society in order for me to have a full life?" And I love this. So I don't want to cut myself out of anything. I want to be Jackie last night talking about that full cup, you know, and I believe this. I believe we can go a long time on nothing but the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing but the fellowship. Sometime, you know, it may get boring to you. Maybe you have to start working some steps. I don't think we ever have done anything, you know, unless we needed to. unless we needed to. We got scared, and we need, I guess something's going to happen if we don't do something, you know. And then we start digging in, finding out what we need to do in order to stay here. Truthfully tell you that it's been a by the grace of God for me. I know this today. You know, we run into people, you know, that's having trouble with AA, and we bad rap them a lot. Oh, I was talking to a guy once, you know, and he's talking about, this guy, he said, I don't believe he wants it. I said, you know, I said, it seemed like every time we hear somebody talk, and after he's sober for a little while, you know, he'll say, I'm only sober by the grace of God. And then we turn around, we say, that guy don't want it. Maybe he ain't got the grace of God yet. The guy looked at me, he said, maybe he's not even asked either, you know. We've got to ask. I know that God, I think God did give me some grace, a grace period to make up my mind which way I wanted to go. I'm confident of that today because, as I told you, I rebelled against prayer when I got here. But now, after a while, you've got to make up your mind. You've got to go one way or the other. And I don't believe there's any standing still in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've either got to go move forward or backward. And I know where backward is. It's going to take me right back to that jug. Did you people ever drink any moonshine? I know that guy has. I was doing, you drink some of that old moonshine out of them old fruit jars. You know, you turn it up and you tell them like it take you 5 minutes to get your breath after you put it down. And then when you do get your breath, you, oh boy, that's good stuff. I know today that I didn't like booze. I know that now. But at the time when I was drinking it, I had to con myself into believing I liked it. If you like something, you don't have to chase it with nothing. No. Did you ever drink any whiskey? You know, you just take a big gulp. And I have done it, but I had to hold my breath for a while. But you know, I try to play macho sometimes. And drank it without anything, but I prefer to chase it with something to take the taste out of my mouth. And anything that I really like, I don't want to take the taste out of my mouth. But I conned myself into believing that I love booze, but I know today I drank it for the effects. I felt like I fit in when I drank. I couldn't go to a restaurant and sit down and enjoy a meal prior to me getting into Alcoholics Anonymous without a drink, because I thought that people was looking at me. I'm going to use the wrong utensil. darn it. Them people are going to be laughing at me. I don't know how to act, you know. Today it don't bother me. We'd up in New York, and this guy, they served these meals, you know, they served them in courses, and if you didn't, when you're for lunch, you're spicy, you know, because you only had a certain period of time to do it in, and the guy would come, and he'd take one away while you're trying to eat on it if you don't watch, because he's got just a certain amount of time to feed these darn things to you. And I'm up there, and he served one dish to me, this one waiter, and he's the talk broken English. I couldn't understand him, and I don't think he understood me. That he was trying to correct me of which utensil to use. You know, I kidded him around a lot about grits, and he would keep saying, go to Atlanta, Atlanta. I could understand that. And so he's trying to tell me what the proper fork to use, you know, for salad or something. And I reckon I got the wrong one, and he grinned at me and tapped me on the hand, pointed at another one, and I just pulled it back and looked at him. And he just went ahead, shook his head and went ahead. If that had happened prior to me getting to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd have just stood there and wouldn't eat. I ain't going to make a mistake like that. Today, if they put food in front of me, I can get it. Even if I had to get it in my hands. It don't make a difference today. I'm comfortable with who I am today. And this is a great reward, you know, for me to get to that point. That I'm not satisfied, you know, that I'm as good as I can possibly get. I'm not trying to brag like that and say that. But I'm comfortable with Billy Moore today. With all my faults, all of everything. Now, I was an eighth grade dropout. I went back last year and got my GED. Went back and got my GED. I got involved in computers and went wild with them. I'm wanting to go to get some more education on that. You know, them's the most fascinating thing in the world. Anything that's smarter than me, I think, are fascinating. but I know them darn things is only as smart as the guy that puts it in there. And sometimes I put stuff in there I can't even get out. You know, I don't know how to get back into it. But it's beautiful. And I can truthfully tell you that my life continues to get better all the time. I'm here to bear that good news that I heard when I got here. And I know you ain't going to believe it, Joe. Definitely you're not. But just keep coming back. The main thing is to get you a sponsor. Gosh, don't get somebody you can talk to. Get somebody you can talk to. Because if you can't talk to them, I'm not one of them sponsors that's smart enough to know when my pigeon's hurting. Now, you hear some people from this podium will say, my sponsor was smart enough to read my mail. He knew what was wrong with me before. Good, if you've got a sponsor like that, but I keep trying to tell my pigeons that I'm not that smart. Now, the only way I'm going to know you've got a problem for you to tell me, and we'll sit down and we'll talk about it. We'll sit down and we'll talk about it. We'll do whatever we can do to take care of it, but you've got to tell me. I can't read your mail without seeing it. I want to continue to remember that. I love to work with new people and young people. I work with, well, everybody seems young to me today. You know, the older you get, the younger they look, you know. My home group now, I'm just so amazed. We meet in a little library in the Taylor County in a rural area, and we have them sitting all the way around the wall sometime. We lie every week now. I know it's supposed to be an honest program, but we have to lie every week. They want us to put down on a chart there how many attends a meeting. And we won't ever, I said, whoever putting that down, be sure you don't ever put over 55. He said, sometime we got 80. I said, fire marshal going to throw us out. You got to lie a little bit, you know. And I don't want to get that honest yet, you know. I'm going to tell you about that dishonesty bit. I was working with this new guy, and he'd been sober for a little while, and his wife goes into the hospital, and his wife's in the hospital, and she called me up. She said, Billy, said, George is drunk. I said, I'll go see him. And I go see him, and me and him, we went to a midnight meeting. We go to this midnight meeting, and I get him home, pull in front of his house. We sat there and talked for a while, and he said, I'm not through drinking. As quick as you leave me, I'm going to drink some more. And I talked to him for quite a while, and he said, it's not changed my thinking. I'm going to drink some more. He said, I'm not through. I want to tell you that right now. And I said, well, you go drink as much as you have to or as little as you have to, but come on back. And I go home. About 3 o'clock in the morning, the phone rang, and it's his wife from the hospital. And she said, where's George? Did George go to a meeting with you? I said, yes, he went to a midnight meeting with me. And she said, well, where's he at? I'm just trying to call him and can't get him at home. I said, he's out with some AA members, drinking coffee. He'll probably be out till 6 or 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. I said, go on to sleep. Don't worry about him. But she didn't do that. She continued to call. Then about 10 o'clock the next morning, she called me again. And she said, how are you doing about your honesty? I said, not too good, but I'm working on it. I'd do the same thing again today, because I knew darn well that she couldn't have done a thing that night except worry about George. I was in hopes that she would go to sleep and get some rest, but she didn't. I used to go to, before all these treatment centers, you know, in these state-funded places, I used to take people to Cleveland Psychiatric Hospital and tell them what kind of a lie to tell to get in there. You know, and then I go down to Rosary Hall, and I'm visiting down there one day. The guy said, ain't it wonderful to be honest? And I said, I guess it would be. And he looked at me, he said, what are you talking about? You guess it would be. I said, well, I just come from Clayton Psychiatric Hospital telling that guy, hey, you better tell him that you're thinking about killing your wife. They'll take you in there. They'll lock you up, brother. You'll get sober while you're in there. And we done that all the time. And we also had a map, you know. You have to give a guy a phony address sometime to get him in there, because they had it mapped off. Certain places they had to go to a different place, you know. And I, if they didn't have the right address, I'd give them one. It's just simple as that. I heard one guy in Cincinnati say that he would take guys to a hospital there in Cincinnati, and he'd just drag him into the emergency room. I found this guy out in your parking lot. Somebody must have hit him. Be drunk, and they take him in because but alcoholics are cunning and baffling, you know. whatever it takes, we've come a long ways. You know, if you ever look back on the history of AA, it just fascinates me when these guys, you know, that starting this archivist thing, and you start flashing through some of the things and looking back, you know, and seeing that, gosh darn, how these people had to do when they first got here, you know, to make it possible. The first guy to come to Kentucky to bring AA there had to meet in a bar. He met in the bar, got one person and met in the bar. Finally ended up a dairy place, give him a room and a milk place, you know, to where he could go to have his first AA meeting. Gosh, son. If we look back and if we really dig in and find out where we come from, what the man, and we've all got so much to look forward to. We're throwing history away every day. We're just discarding it. I had a bunch of it to burn up. I can tell you there's a bunch of history around AA right now that the people are just thinking, you know, well, just that's just a part of my sobriety, you know. Don't mean that. They don't think about how much it means. A speaker that I've heard, you know, so many times. I've got John to make a copy of a tape of him. I'd heard so many times when I first got sober, you know, and he's passed away now. He's sobered up in the late 30s or early 40s, and I used to hear him often when I first got sober, and he didn't mean nothing to me then. But now I've listened to his tapes, you know, and he tells all the things he's going through, things prior to me ever getting sober, you know, and things how the service structure, the first year I didn't even know this until I heard his tape, and it was one guy's tape, not the one that John run off for, but he was talking about the delegates when they established this in 1951, and they sent a delegate the first 2 years from Ohio. Then the next 2 years they sent a delegate, no election, no DCM, no report backs, no nothing. But then, so the third term, they said, we don't need that general service office. And they refused to send a delegate for either 2 or 4 years there. They didn't send one. But we come a long ways. Everybody has an Alcoholics Anonymous. And brother, it's the most beautiful, the guy that took this meeting to Russia, come spend a night in my home, good buddy of mine and Bill's, and a bunch of other people. He's a good friend to AA, just an AA in general. Come and spend a night with me in my home and call me up a week later, and we go to Mammoth Cave, and we're talking about that. He said he never felt so close to the heritage of AA in his life as he did when he was in Russia, like it was brand new when it was just starting, carrying the same message that they carried then. And it works. It works. The one thing that impressed me about what that he said, you know, he said they asked him, how do you think AA will work in our culture? And he turned around and said, there is no possible way for me to answer that question. I can just tell you how it's worked in some others. Maybe it will work the same way in yours. And it's the same way with me trying to share my story. I don't know what's going to happen to you through your sobriety, through working different things. All I can do is tell you what's happened to me. And that's all it is, 12-step work, sharing one with another of how we did it in order to stay sober. And I can truthfully tell you, sometimes I shudder to think, you know, of all the mistakes I made when I first got in Alcoholics Anonymous and still managed to stay sober. I don't know how it happened now. Looking back on it, I know definitely that when I wasn't working the program, the grace of God took over. Just as simple as that. and it took over until I would get back and start asking for help, getting guidance. And it's always been there for me, the grace of God has, and I know it will for you if we don't complicate it. We was talking about that before the meeting. You know, sometimes we think we've got to be real good in order to get God's help. You ever feel that way? You know, I'm not good enough to expect Him to help me. Man. My God will help me regardless. I run into a guy in Nashville, Tennessee, and he said, when I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a drunken bookie. And he said, I'm sober 13 years, and I'm here to tell you that God does answer prayers for bookies. Because I'm a sober bookie today. And you know, God answers prayers for us regardless. You know, and don't complicate it. Don't complicate it and think that we've got to be so darn good, because we're never going to get that good. I don't think that I'm ever going to be what that I know that I'm capable of being in God's eyes. In God's eyes. And I know that He's not going to hang me for that too, you know. He's going to love me right on. I want to thank everybody for listening to me. I want to thank, had the opportunity to meet Bill's mother and father this weekend, and that was, and the three girls and his son here. Darn, there's so many people that I just really stand out in my life. He took me to his home, you know, and I wasn't in, I'm going to tell you the truth, I wasn't even invited no place prior to getting to Alcoholics Anonymous. Never owned a suit of clothes in my life until I got to AA. Never did need one either, brother. I was never invited to a wedding reception, to a child christening, not even to be a pallbearer until after I was in AA. And so you don't need suits if you don't do any of these things. And you know, and people just open their homes to me all over the country. You know, you can go in, and I can truthfully tell you, anywhere in the Southeast that I go to now, I'm not exaggerating, if there's 150 or 200 people there, I'm going to know somebody if it's Alcoholics Anonymous function. And that's a good feeling. That's a good feeling, just to know that we got friends all over. And it's not just for me. It's for each and every one of us. For each and every one of us, we'll just get involved. It's beautiful. Thank you. My name's Billy Moore, and I'm an alcoholic.